Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty, a daily podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into wide receivers who lost value or were hurt by the NFL draft. Number one, DeAndre Hopkins. They both traded for an established wide receiver in Hollywood Brown. Listen, is Hollywood Brown a superstar? No. Is he a really good player? Yeah, I think so. And you add him to the offense. It's basically a young addition, young, fresher legs in an offense that, frankly, had AJ Green on the perimeter. I mean, I think it's good. I think it's a good offense. It's a diverse offense. They have a lot of ways to beat you. James Conner, Zach Ertz. AJ Green is still serviceable. Okay, he still can play. Rondale Moore is interesting. Hopkins is good, right? Like, he's really good. But Hollywood offers you a whole different animal in terms of what he can bring. Just a really diverse option. So that happens. And at the same time, Hopkins gets there's a 6-game suspension for Hopkins for PED use. So you're getting hammered from basically the added competition perspective and the losing 6 games perspective as well. So none of that helps. Hopkins' contract is really weird because of post-trade. He had hit an extension that really like altered the wide receiver market. It's one of those historically abnormal contracts that's probably helped reshape some of this Christian Kirk effect on other teams. Hopkins' role is, I think, insulated in Arizona through 2023. He's got a $30.8 million cap hit next year, but only 8.2 of that's actually a potential savings. So I think it's more of a 2-year structure. And most of these contracts, any suspensions void them. So that'd be one thing that I would watch for, or void the guarantees a lot of times. But I don't think at this point he's going to have much guaranteed money left. It's going to be more the cap hits that's going to impact him. Hopkins will be 30 years old in 2022. Saw his lowest targets per game, 6.4 this past year. It's the only time in his career he's actually seen less than 127 targets since his rookie season. So interesting job there. Again, he was injured and missed some time as well. He's available at wide receiver 40. I think he can beat that, but again, he's got to beat it in down the stretch added wide receiver 2 type production in your lineup. I think by the time he comes back, you could see it might be AJ Green's on his last legs, or it might be, that Rondale Moore isn't super effective, or heck, for that matter, it could be that Ertz isn't that effective, right? I think he could come back into a role where he's the fresh legs in an offense. And that wouldn't shock me super much. So I do think from that range, he can beat it. I wouldn't bail on him and just give for like a second this year. I'd probably just hold on to him. But yeah, I mean, in like a tighter league, if it's like FFPC or something like that, and you can get maybe a second, like a future second or something like that, and kind of preserve a roster spot. I don't necessarily love that, but I think from a roster shaping perspective, especially if you're going to have a hard time with holding on to a guy who's actually suspended, I would be an option I potentially look at. All right, Chase Claypool has essentially repeated his rookie season. I don't really think he stepped forward much. Remained the same with 3.9 receptions per game, increased slightly in yards per game from 54.6 to 57.3. The big difference was his touchdowns. He dropped from 9 receiving and 2 rushing touchdowns, so 11 total in 2020, down to only 2 receiving touchdowns in 2021. So that's really the big impact on his fantasy step back, but you didn't see a bigger role. You didn't see bigger volume. So that's the thing that concerns me. They add in Pickens. This is a team that just constantly churns through day 2 wide receivers. I think it's a good investment personally. Claypool's in that wide receiver 40 range, which right around where Hopkins is. That's just not where I'd rather, I'd rather wait later on a guy like Thielen that's going to make an impact or that can make an impact. I don't really like going that developmental range. You start doing that and all of a sudden you've got 2, 3, 4, 5 guys that look like Claypool on your roster and you're just sort of banging your head against it. And that's the range of the position that I'd much rather take a bet on an injury way guy, right? That's really the range that we sacrifice a bit of. Next up is Devonta Smith, and I'll be interested to see where his value falls. They add A.J. Brown. They have Jalen Hurts, who's good, not great. You know, we'll see. He needs to take a step forward as a passer, I think. And this is the decision of Philly to say, hey, listen, it's time to see this now, right? This is time to sort of play it out. I'll be interested to see how that unfolds there with Jalen Hurts. And going forward. But listen, I think this is a ceiling capping situation for Devonta Smith. The fact that you bring in A.J. Brown, you have a highly efficient Dallas Goedert as well. And listen, you've got a trio of guys. Can they make it work? Yeah, but I think you really need Jalen Hurts to come out and play well. I think there's questions about that. You need them to play pass happy. And we saw them go from playing pass happy to the most run-heavy team in the league last year at the end. So big change there in terms of how that is. He's valued wide receiver 20 to 25 range. I think at that point he's an avoid. If he were to fall into like the 30 range of the position, something like that, I'd be a little bit more interested. If like he started to fall behind Bateman, for example, I think that would be a good indication of value there, because I'd probably still rather have Devonta over Bateman. All right, Curtis Samuel's next one up, and I just can't get over the Washington Commanders. A year after Washington signs Curtis Samuel for 3 years and $34.5 million, they have to go back to the well and draft Jahan Dotson with the 16th pick in the draft. Samuel was targeted 9 times in 5 games. Yes, 9 times in 5 games in 2021, and has a career high of 105 targets. They paid him, again, let's go back and do that again, over $11 million per season. And honestly, it seems quaint by the 2022 free agent standards of like Christian Kirk. It seems like, oh yeah, like Curtis Samuel, like making 8 figures. Oh, it's just chump change. You know, when you're paying double that to Christian Kirk, just wild. The selection of Dotson, I think, is a recognition by the Commanders that they can't trust Samuel. He's likely a cut candidate in the offseason. Wide receiver 75 in value. I'm having a hard time seeing how he's going to beat that. He's fallen 17 spots overall in the last month. So I'm out on Samuel, and I think this is probably an indication that Washington is out on him as well. And it was curious. This is an old staff that didn't understand how to use him. Then they paid him $34 million to bring him to Washington, and that hasn't worked out through season one. So we'll see how that unfolds. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I thought this one was interesting because I thought Amon-Ra St. Brown had a decent chance to miss competition. How was that possible? Well, they picked at 2 and 32, and that really sandwiched what I thought was going to be a run of 6 wide receivers or 5 wide receivers, and you know, where Jahan Dotson would land. I figured that wasn't maybe the biggest threat to Amon-Ra St. Brown. But what do? They actually come and trade up right into that landing zone, and they get Jameson Williams. So, I think pretty highly of Jameson Williams. For Amon-Ra St. Brown, I think this is interesting. And it's because Jameson Williams might sit time, and there's no guarantee that Jameson Williams is good. And so you have Amon-Ra St. Brown, who basically, to end the season, played like a top 10 guy. And he returns with Goff. He returns to an offense that's going to probably have Hockenson. It's going to feel crowded. That said, really good wide receivers are able to carve out a really good niche even when it's crowded. Other questions about if Amon-Ra St. Brown is really good? Yeah. But he was really good in a short sample size. And that's a rookie season. That's a day 3 guy who comes in and really grows from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. Was there some tailwind to that? Yeah. But I do think it's a I think he has a shot, right? I don't think he's drawing dead on being a future fantasy, a multiple year fantasy starter or anything like that. So, yes, this hurts his cost, but I think wide receiver 430 valuation, I think he's capable of beating that. Again, we've seen him play. We've seen him do really well, and where we haven't seen guys like Bateman do that, you know, and I'm not going to, this isn't beat up on Rashad Bateman hour, but I think it's interesting when you sort of compare the two, do you take the, but those are really different and good profiles to compare. Do you take the guy who has done it and maybe came in with lower pedigree, but you really have to adjust that prior, and how do you do it? I think a lot of that work that we did on yards per route run and AOD this year is helpful to that end, right? Your player tells you really early on whether or not they're going to be good. And I think, honestly, the NFL shows us a lot of that stuff too, right? We should kind of, they probably have some more sophisticated modeling in terms of what they can offer about progress and the like. And I think that we see teams move on relatively soon. They probably know more information. But that's probably more on the fail side. I think with a guy like Brown, you're looking like, hey, like there's really potential that he's actually a success story. So at wide receiver 30, I'm interested in his cost. I think if he continues to fall, if he slides a little bit, I'll be even more interested in his cost. I mean, because I think he's got wide receiver 2 potential, and if that becomes wide receiver 3 or 4 type cost, I'm becoming much more interested. So that would be the him between 30 and 35, 40, somewhere in that range, I think he becomes a target. All right, last but not least is Corey Davis. And the Jets befuddle me. And I actually had to call my editor, Adam, and I said, can you explain this to me? Because I don't understand it. And we spent a while on the phone. And the conclusion that we came to was they drafted Garrett Wilson, and it feels like they have a lot of the same type of stuff with Garrett Wilson, with Corey Davis, Elijah Moore. They don't have a true – they don't feel like they have a lot of they feel like they have a bunch of number two guys. And that's all great. But – and I've talked about this in other – I think it was another podcast or whatever. But if you all you have is number two guys, right, you can get bogged down. And you can have a very diverse offense, but in basketball, if you're – when things get really tight, you need a guy that can go out and just get a bucket on its own. And I don't know if the Jets have that. And if they don't have that, like, man, I think it could be tough for Zach Wilson. That said, I think a lot of stuff that Garrett Wilson and Corey Davis can do can generally overlap. And if that's true, right, maybe the addition of Garrett Wilson while they have Corey Davis isn't meant as a redundancy. It's meant as a replacement. And you look at Corey Davis, and he's could be expendable, no guaranteed money after this year. They could save $10.5 million of his $11.2 million cap hit in 2023 by cutting him. Maybe that's more what it's about. And maybe they don't really see Corey Davis through 1 year as a long-term guy. The funny part is you could get the next year and you'd be like, oh, that $11 million cap number on $10.5 million cap number on Corey Davis, like that's very reasonable all of a sudden. Like that could really be a reasonable number, you know, or it's $11.2 million. That's a really reasonable number compared to the rest of the position. So we'll see how that goes. But it feels to me they got a lot of redundancy. And I wonder if their plan is to say, hey, we're going to just move on from Corey Davis. He's not really our long-term guy. And Wilson is going to basically do that for them. So that would be the thing that's the conclusion that I came to with their process. So I'm fading him. He's wide receiver 76 in terms of valuation. He does have wide receiver 4 type production in his range of outcome. But is that super helpful? I don't know. It feels more like he could eat some innings for you in terms of being an in-season fill-in type, more than he's a guy you want to build around in your wide receiver core at this point of his career. All right, that'll do it for this episode. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.